Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. How can we heal from political strife and turmoil while still doing the important work on the critical issues of today? Perhaps some of those answers might come from outside the interior world of politics itself. Neil Fulton is dean of the School of Law at the University of South Dakota. He recently published an article outlining ideas for the work ahead, and he joins us now on the phone with some insight. Dean Fulton, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for the opportunity, Lori. Glad to be here.
I actually came across this article that you published on LinkedIn, and I saw the headline, and I was like, boy, I got to read that. It's like, you know, being thirsty and needing a drink of water. So thank you, first of all, for agreeing to help bring this to a radio audience as well, and people can find the full piece on the Grotto Network. And we'll put a link up on our website after the show, but it's grottonetwork.com if you want to look at it now. What led you to want to put into some words for readers thoughts about how important it is to have this conversation right now? What inspired you to write this?
You know, really, Lori, it was thinking about civic engagement, which is something as dean of a law school that I do for my day job, but it's also something that I'm interested in as a scholar and just as a citizen, to look at how we're engaging with each other. And it doesn't take long on TV or in the newspaper and social media to see so much engagement around politics that's filled with anger and hate. And I sort of asked myself, what if you try and envision a politics that's driven by love? And how would we create in our own minds a politics driven more by love for other folks than hate? That's kind of where it started.
And to that point, there are a great number of Americans of all political affiliations who consider violence to be justified. And that was even before the events on January 6th in the U.S. Capitol. We have a pretty clear picture of this being a problem in America, to the point where they feel like violence might be a course of action that's reasonable.
Yeah, you know, and one of the reasons that really led me to start thinking about it from a place of love is, you know, as a Catholic myself, as a person of faith, and a lot of people engage with their politics from positions of faith, but a central Christian idea is this idea of love, right, as loving your neighbor as yourself. And so it's very, I think a lot of us are discombobulated and disconcerted by seeing people engaging in political environments from positions that are rooted in faith in ways that are very dehumanizing and destructive, and that reduce political opponents to somehow less than human. And that makes the step to violence very, very easy. So, you know, I wrote this before the events of January 6th. Grotto decided to run it on January 6th, as opposed to inauguration, I think in response to what happened at the Capitol, because it was a very disconcerting environment to see a lot of folks rooting political action in positions of faith, but manifesting in a way that's, to me, wildly inconsistent with faith.
Yeah. So first, you say, we must demand, and more importantly, offer a different view of our political opponents. Tell me a little bit about how to do that. What does engaging with love and respect sound like?
I mean, clearly, I think the first step is viewing political opponents as humans possessed of human dignity, focusing on the shared reality that we have before immediately reducing them to positions that we disagree with. The most striking part about that to me is if you watch political debate, frequently we reduce our political opponents to people who are evil. You can find discussion of political opponents as animals. We saw, you know, about a third of the population in public opinion polls prior to the election saying that violence against opponents in election was justified. That's not viewing our political opponents as humans like us. And the reason to me that we not only demand that, but we start by offering it, is I think in this, the place to begin is with introspection. How do we engage? What can we offer to improve the process, rather than what do we demand from others first?
Hmm. One of the things I've been hearing a lot on both sides is just the phrase un-American. My opponent is un-American. And the logic of that, that you somehow would, whether it's being a vegetarian or not wanting to wear a mask, that somehow that is an American or un-American decision seems like a pretty sweeping, you know, making someone into an other. They are not like us. There's all kinds of ways that that people do this, that we do this every day.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the key second points for me was our political vocabulary and lexicon really needs to retool. I mean, we immediately go from zero to un-American. I'm certainly not saying that our political engagement, we don't tell people that we disagree, that they're wrong, that we think their ideas will be not the best policy available, but we too frequently lump folks into a black or white category of good or evil, American or un-American, really only defined in most instances by what we prefer. And I think language matters in our discussion, and our language too often disincentivizes compromise and engagement. So reserving ideas like un-American for the most extreme is something that we have gotten away from and that we need to each individually police ourselves on, because it's imperative. How we talk dictates how we act.
So I've been thinking about this after I read this article with what people come on this show and say, and how often someone will use a word, and kind of navigate it in my own mind, Neil. Like, how do you correct that on the air without, how do you encourage someone to use a little bit better language in daily conversation? Because our conversations so much are live on the air and they have consequences, and people are listening and tweeting about our conversations as they happen. For our listeners, what do you think some are of the ways that we can, in our daily conversations, hear some of that coming out of our own mouths and correct it, and then also coming out of someone else's mouth in a conversation and saying, hey, let's reframe that? Like, do you have a sense of how to encourage people to do that in real time?
You know, I think one of the goals I had in writing this was to encourage all of us to pursue some introspection and some empathy. Introspection in our engagement with people around us and the political process, to acknowledge our fallibility as political actors and political systems created by humans that are inherently infallible, to look first at what we can offer to the outside world as opposed to correcting or arguing with other folks. Look first within. And then secondly, when we engage with other people, to engage first with empathy, the search for understanding for where that person is coming from, and trying to find the common ground of understanding. So I don't want to let you off the hook, Laurie, that you don't police your guests, but I think more fundamentally for each of us as guests on your show, engaging in political conversations around the dinner table or in more political settings, start by looking within at how we can create a more loving political climate, and looking without to understand first, to create a more productive engagement.
Yeah, I'm not sure that lets me off the hook at all. I think it challenges me, as it should challenge all of us, to think about our own words too. Which brings us to this third point that you have, and you kind of outlined it there, but this idea that, and I want to bring it back to faith, that some politics, as people bring faith into political settings, tend to think that this is, you know, divine guidance, or it elevates to an importance of standing with either, you know, the founding fathers or with the father above, and it can take on a tone that makes it seem.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. Expand on that idea.
You know, I think certainly, I'm a lifelong Catholic, and we saw as a faith community this year the election of the second Catholic president. You did not have to look hard on social media to find homilies by Catholic priests telling you that your vote for one presidential candidate or another rendered you not Catholic. And what's striking to me is that in many of our efforts to bring faith into our politics, which I think has real potential for positive engagement, we bring it with this sense that our engagement is going to be infallible. When the reality is, our political system created by humans, our political engagement as humans, is inherently going to be fallible. We are trying to take sacred ideas into a secular setting. And if I can have people of faith take one thing away about their political engagement, is if your faith is as sincere as it needs to be, human political engagement is always going to be disappointing. And I think it's important for us to first acknowledge our fallibility as political actors and the fallibility of our human political systems. Too often, we are acting like faith renders our political positions infallible, and it just doesn't.
And fourth and finally, we must act, and we must act now by showing love to our political adversaries, which is a radical thing to say. And I'll tell you why it's radical, Neil Fulton, because whenever people are going to argue that you're giving up doing the hard thing and the work that needs to be done around whatever issue that they find incredibly important right now, you disagree. Tell me why.
Well, I mean, first, I'm not encouraging people to give up their political ideas, right? You continue to advocate for your political ideas. But what I am saying is that for each of us, the person is us and the time is now. And by that, I mean that there's not a bipartisan moment for engaging other people with love. Each of us can make the choice in our engagement to see the person across from us as a human being possessed of basic human dignity, and engage with them in that way. That doesn't mean that I end up agreeing with you about whether marginal tax rates should go up or down in all instances, but it does mean that in that engagement with you, how I see you, how I describe you, and how I engage with you is rooted first and foremost in this fundamental idea that you're a human being entitled to dignity and my love, and that obligation is on me at all times, regardless of how you respond.
And you also say it's beyond the calculation of whether or not you win or lose, in the sense that this is separate or connected to the sense of getting something that you want in the political arena.
Yeah, I think it is that the idea of how we view ourselves as human beings and as citizens, going back to your point about description as un-American, that this engagement through the system and how we see each other is more profound, transcendent, and fundamental than the resolution of any individual issue. And that, you know, we can work through individual political issues with the through line of how we engage each other, sustaining us as a community. And right now, too often, the through line is those like me good, those not like me bad, and no effort or inclination or, frankly, vocabulary or toolkit to bridge that divide. Bridging that divide is what makes us American.
The person is us. The time is now. We're going to put a link up to this, brief to the point essay by Dean Neil Fulton from the School of Law at the University of South Dakota on our website. You can also find it at grottonetwork.com just by putting in his name. Neil, thank you so much. We hope to have you back again. You're doing some really interesting work on COVID and our response to that as a people as well. Hopefully you'll come back and tell us about that in future days. Thank you.
Love to do it, Lori. Thanks.